Who let the dogs out?
Who let the dogs out?
It's time for Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, traditional small animal medicine and surgery, chiropractic, laser therapy, acupuncture, and Chinese herbal medicine. 518-789-3440, MillertonVet.com. With us today, Dr. Carolyn Cannon, owner and chief vet at the Millerton Veterinary Practice. Hello, Dr. Cannon.
Hello, good morning. I'll bet you have some great questions for me today.
Starting with Esther in Maine. You must be psychic. All right, the pound, that's not good. The pond where I used to swim now has a duckweed problem to the point where I don't swim in it anymore. Brunhilde, my golden lab, still enjoys paddling around and fetching sticks in it, though. Any health risks there?
So that's a great question. So when Esther says the pond, maybe she means her own pond. Little small ponds usually don't have too much of a problem, my understanding is, with overgrowth of duckweed. But the duckweed can be good and bad. So we know we're worried about algae. This has come about, some bad algae overgrowth has been come about in the front of our brains a couple of years ago with dogs dying from ingesting some bad algae. And so the duckweed is not toxic at all to dogs. So dogs can go in there and they can chomp on it. And I think it's high in calcium oxalates, but if they're not eating a whole meal of it, then I think that that's okay. The duckweed overgrowth, though, just like everything, my understanding is that when the duckweed overgrows, then it can lead to overgrowth of like anaerobic bacteria and sometimes the bad algae. Although when there's some duckweed, it can keep the good algae in good shape, which will fight off the bad algae. So I guess just like everything else in the world, you know, everything in moderation. If you have a little bit of it, then don't worry. If the whole pond is duckweed and it gets really, really hot, I would worry about some bad algae. So, you know, I don't know that you can really tell by looking at it. You can see to a certain extent whether there's a lot of algae or not. But if it is your own pond, my suggestion is to remove some of the duckweed. Maybe not all of it, but some of it. It is good food, though, for fish and for birds, et cetera, for the waterfowl. But if you have an overgrowth of it, it can be conducive to the growth of things that might be dangerous for your dog.
All right, so basically, the bare bones question, but it sounds like Esther doesn't swim in it anymore. But
it must have a lot of duckweed, I would guess.
Right, but Brunhilde is still paddling around without getting strangled, she said. So,
yeah, I don't know that the strangulation is really the issue. I think it's just the dirty water. So, yeah. So what is feeding that duckweed and what is going to happen to the water because of if the pond is completely covered with duckweed, I wouldn't let my dog swim in there.
Right. But where a human would swim and where a dog would swim are still two different things.
Oh, well, absolutely.
Yeah, so no, I'm not debating that with you. I'm just trying to figure out whether you could say, yeah, let her go for the summer. You know, just it depends. But
My thoughts were around maybe they're asking because of the algae issue, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just the duckweed itself. But still, you're asking whether it's safe or not, and so it's really hard to tell.
Right.
But a severe overgrowth of duckweed probably is not a safe water supply for your dog.
All right, that's reasonable. That's something that a civilian can do something with.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ashley and Sharon. My 12-year-old son has an Angora house rabbit. I want to be sure we don't let the bunny get overheated this summer, but I'm also concerned that air conditioning might be hard on her. Do you have any thoughts? He's a responsible kid, but he needs to know what to be looking for in terms of her getting too hot or too cold. I think that this is going to be the King Solomon edition of Ask the Vet.
So Angora rabbits are very, they do have a lot of hair, so they can get hot very easily. And I think this is, you know, to have to have a child who's raising any kind of pet needs to know what to watch for. I think that's a great thing to actually teach, rather than to assume they have the common sense to know that. So a rabbit who's doing a lot of panting or splayed out on the floor, all four legs in a different direction, is overheated. They probably would be doing both. And keeping the bunny in the house, it is a house rabbit, is a great idea. You know, keeping your house cool, so you close your shades and you close your curtains in the morning when you know that it's going to be 90 degrees, and you can keep the house cool and use fans to circulate the air. And air conditioning's fine as long as you don't have one of those window air conditioners that's going to blow right on the bunny. You don't want to blow a fan on the bunny or an air conditioner on the bunny. So your rabbit has to be able to hop away from a fan, or be able to, you know, have the opportunity to hop away from a fan or the air conditioning blower. Excuse me. If you find that, you know, you're cooling your house too much because you like it really, really cold, then your bunny's going to try to snuggle up and in a corner somewhere and maybe shiver. I can't imagine an Angora rabbit doing that unless it's pretty old, but you know, those are the things to watch for, just as we would shiver. Hopefully that's not the case. So you need to sort of have a big enough space so that the bunny can get warm if it gets too cold, and can cool off on something. If you've got your rabbit in a hutch, you know, some people even will put in some tiles in the floor that'll stay cool, and they can splay out on the cool tiles. But maybe in a different room from the window air conditioning. If you have central air, not a problem. But you don't want air. You want cold air blowing on your bunny where the bunny can't get away from it.
All right.
And water, plenty of water. Water in the bottle, and water in a bowl, and cool that water off a couple times a day.
So are you basically saying change it a couple of times a day?
Yeah.
Because I learned, yeah. It took me decades. If someone had said, oh, by the way, cats like clean water, a couple of my cats would have had completely different lives.
They like clean water, but also, you know, and the cooler water during the day. And when bunnies are overheated, then they really have a hard time, especially an Angora rabbit. They have very long, thick hair, and they have trouble dissipating the heat. So you can put a little bit of water, a little cool water on the insides of the ears, or even on the outsides of the ears, both. They dissipate heat through their ears, the head and the neck, and the insides of the thighs. So cool those places off with a little bit of water. Sometimes all it takes is cooling off those ears, and your bunny's doing fine.
All right, and just, I'm going to skip to canines. A long time ago, there was a golden retriever puppy in my father's house that got totally, totally, totally overheated. And I think what I did is I ice cubed his ear tips and his belly. His ear tips, his belly, and his the wonderful rubber mouth lips, it seemed to settle him down. Was that okay?
I mean, well, it depends. If you've really got heat stroke, you probably don't want to use ice and cool things down too quickly. But if you just have a cool, bunnies probably won't like ice, so a cold washcloth, right. Then wipe the ears down, wipe the bottoms of the feet, and, yes, the insides of the thighs, great idea, you know, too. And then you can even do a water bottle in the freezer and wrap it in, so if you've got ice inside of the water bottle, and wrap it in a towel just so your bunny, if he's in the cage, can lean against it. Sometimes we'll really cool them off.
Oh, that's great. All right. There must be a patent on that somewhere. All right. Brian in Danbury, when a dog coughs, it might not be coughing. It might be reverse sneezing. If that's true, what's the difference between a cough and a reverse sneeze? What's the difference between sneezing and reverse sneezing? Confused.
Yeah, there are some YouTube videos now that show you about reverse sneezing, which is really helpful for me, was really helpful during COVID. A dog will cough. The cough goes out. The reverse sneeze is sucking air in. So typically you will see that, you'll hear that noise when the air is going in. So if you watch, It's noise in the pharynx, and it's either the palate, the epiglottis, or the soft palate is irritated in what we call the naso or the oropharynx. It's that sort of no man's land between the nose and the throat. And when there's irritation there, it could be from pollens, it could be from other aerosolized particles, and it causes some irritation, maybe a little bit of not swelling that you could see, but the mucous membranes are irritated and swollen a little bit. And so it causes that kind of an intake. And it's very dramatic and very scary, but a reverse sneeze is not life-threatening. They can still get air in just fine. The brachycephalic dogs who don't have a long face are the ones who are more prone to it because they have a lot of redundant tissue in that area already. So sort of all these folds of tissue that would have gone into the long nose of the dog are all in one spot there. And so it's something that you should see your veterinarian about. Many dogs have that in spring with the pollens. You can see the yellow pollen outside an inch thick on your
car,
picnic table, or on your car, and so you know that it's out there. And it's not necessarily an allergic reaction, but a response, but an irritant reaction to the pollens, which are so they have little sharp edges if you look at a microscopic view of a grain of pollen. They're very very pointy and very sharp, and they cause irritation.
And how likely are dogs to get pollinated, so to speak? Like, they'll sneeze. They can react to even dogs who are just pretty okay outside during high yellow pollen. Can they be more allergic?
They can sneeze. They can sneeze a lot, but not all dogs are prone to the reverse sneeze. In Chinese medicine, it's a sort of a dampness issue, meaning that there's more. It's a long explanation. But anyway, we might even talk about a change in diet and things like that to lower inflammation in general.
Okay.
So, if first speak with your veterinarian, sometimes a little bit of Benadryl might help with that or some other antihistamine. Antihistamines don't work that great in dogs, but they're worth a try because when they work, how wonderful is that for a seasonal problem? And then there are other possibilities of helping with reverse sneeze.
Okay. Now moving to Germantown, my girlfriend's cat goes through phases of pickiness, and it's driving me crazy, constantly trying to come up with things he will deign to eat. Sometimes we think we've finally found the foolproof cat food, and then, bam, he won't touch it anymore. Is there any actual reason for this behavior? If not, will he just get over himself and eat when he gets hungry enough?
That depends on the age of the cat. This is a problem with cats, and that's why they're called finicky. It's kind of a multifaceted answer to the question, depending on the age of the cat. So you want to make sure with a veterinarian that there's nothing physically wrong. So teeth, oral problems, and periodontal disease can be an issue. When we're talking about cats being finicky, they're just trying different. They may be okay with something for a couple of days, and then they find that hurts too, and so that's something to have checked out for sure. Texture and odor preferences are big with cats, and that's why we have problems with many cats with litter box problems. So they won't, they'll be using the pan, and you might change up the litter, and they have a texture preference or an odor preference, and they don't like it, and they won't use the litter pan. So same idea with cats with their foods. Now, young cats, usually you can find, if they don't have any health problem, you can usually find a couple of things that you can rotate that they will like. As cats get older, then they can have health problems that cause that. So they run to the bowl, they think that they're hungry, they take a smell of it, and they get a little nausea, and they don't really want to eat. And so people tell me, and I've experienced with my own, that they'll run up, and they just lick a little bit of the juice, They don't really want to eat it. Again, it's a can be a texture thing. There are foods, the food manufacturers know that, and they make things in pate and chunks and strips and all kinds of different ways to get your cat to eat. But the other part of this is that many people want their cats to eat more than they need. So if you have a young cat who doesn't look too thin, then you're not going to really worry that he doesn't eat everything in his bowl. So it's a question in combination with a physical exam.
And, of course, the only thing missing from the question is the age. So.
Right. So that's part of it, too. And sometimes you can have a cat, you know, sort of middle-aged, has the problem. And those cats, usually there's some physical health issue that causes that to happen, especially if it didn't occur earlier.
Okay. It's just, you know, it's picky cats. One is almost bred to believe that the cat's going to be picky, and yet I'm thinking where cats, you know, regular older cats just eat, and then they, you know, some are, some aren't.
Yeah, I guess so. My cats are normal weight, and they are not picky. They'll eat a piece of broccoli that we have on the floor, but I do understand that there are small, especially sometimes as petite females, and they stay slim their whole lives, and they just don't eat much. And that's okay, as long as they don't get too thin.
Right, and I think it has everything, as you say. I mean, A, to do with age, and B, I guess the first question that I would ask is, okay, what are they eating?
What are they eating? And right, and where did the cat come from?
Right,
and is this a cat who used to eat well, or wasn't finicky before, or is this a cat who's always finicky? Definitely, you don't want to, unless you know that your cat has a pretty clean bill of health and that your cat's not overweight. Then you definitely don't want to wait them out. So you don't like put something down and say you're going to eat it or else, because that doesn't work with cats. Is they will go for days without eating, and then they can get really ill.
Now, from Germantown to the city itself, Linwood in Manhattan, last March I adopted a 10-year-old Samoyed. So basically he's 85% fluff. We've already had some hot, humid days in the city, and I don't want him to be miserable. Is it true that long hair keeps dogs insulated from the heat, or is that some kind of urban legend?
These dogs were bred to live in the Arctic, and so they know, you know, it's the amount of hair with a very hot day and humid day when they can't dissipate the heat through the tongue, it's way too much hair in order to keep them, quote-unquote, insulated. So they're going to get really hot because they can't dissipate enough of that heat. And it is true that thicker-coated breeds have more of a tendency to get hot. The hair on a poodle typically is very thick. Even if it's short, they tend to get really hot. You have it's a 10-year-old Samoyed, so we don't know too much about his history, but you've got to keep this dog inside in the summertime mostly, unless the weather is really nice and cool. You want to do your walks super early in the morning or really later at night when it's cooler, and make sure that they go to the groomer. So a groomer can get out a lot of that undercoat, and you may even want to do a groomer once a month, especially in the hot season, to get out all that undercoat. They need to be groomed, and then you're going to need to brush on a daily basis. So you need to, you know, continue to get out as much undercoat as you can, and then keep them as cool as possible. And just remember that they can dissipate heat through the bottoms of the feet. So if you're going on a short walk and you want to dip those toes in the water, would be great. Have a drink partway through. You can bring those wonderful foldable bowls with you, and maybe a water bottle in your pocket. And remember that they can get rid of heat through the oral cavity, so the tongue and the oral cavity, the bottoms of the feet, and a little bit through the insides of their ears and the groin. You have to be super careful in the heat. You know, some people have clipped their dogs. I think that I don't know whether it's any better than getting them a really good grooming and doing the constant brushing.
And that's excellent mind reading on top of everything, because that was what I was thinking. There used to be, probably still is, it probably costs triple, but there used to be a thing where everybody in a certain zip code, and I've mentioned this before, had their retrievers or long-haired dogs shaved for the, or clipped for the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just—I could never tell whether it was once again a zip code thing, she said diplomatically, or whether it was the most efficient thing for the dog.
Yeah, and some, even like a golden retriever, some dogs grow a very, very thick coat, and there's nothing else you can do but clip the torso in order to keep your dog cool, especially if they want to be super active, and they won't swim. but there are some diseases too that cause them to not shed normally. But otherwise, you wouldn't necessarily need to clip. So, I think if you can get enough grooming in there, it's probably not necessary.
All right, and then we alluded to this question earlier by accident, so you might have answered it. But Dom and Sarah in Canaan. Every spring, Henry, our Chihuahua mix, has an allergic reaction to pollen. The vet wants to put him on allergy medicine, but my wife and I are not big on pharmaceuticals, and we are leery of giving antihistamines to a pet. It just seems like a big chemical load for such a tiny system. Are we overreacting?
Yeah, you have to keep in mind that a true allergy is an abnormal response of the immune system, right? So if you can either remove the offending allergen, which would mean, and right now, I don't know whether Dom and Sarah's dog has itchy eyes, itchy runny eyes. Are there repeated ear infections? Is it itchy skin? Is it hair loss with itchy skin? That kind of thing. So those things might be addressed a little bit differently, but in general, your dog's having an abnormal response of the immune system to environmental allergens, presumably if it's a seasonal problem. If it was a food problem primarily, it would be a year-round issue. So what I can say about that is if it is seasonal and antihistamines help, then you're talking about a short-term short-term dosing of antihistamines. I have no problem with that. Even in a little dog, it's just that the dose has to be appropriate for the little dog. So you can get liquid forms of many of the antihistamines. Antihistamines just don't work that well in dogs. I have used, sometimes I use quercetin, which is natural. It's a flavonoid. It's a plant-based, powerful antioxidant called a flavonoid. And it also has anti-inflammatory and antihistamine characteristics. You have to get that dosed properly as well. You can use quercetin as well as something like Benadryl. If those things help. In my hands, quercetin doesn't help that many dogs in a dramatic way either. So sometimes you'll find a reaction that is helped by antihistamines and or quercetin, and that's great. Otherwise, you have a miserable dog. If it's a skin issue, then getting rid of those pollens by keeping the dog indoors as much as possible with the windows closed, meaning air conditioning and bathing, or even just rinsing them off. So you go outside, you do your walk, bring them in, rinse them off. Easy to do with a Chihuahua. Rinse and dry.
and repeat.
That removes the allergens from the skin and helps them from getting them up the nose as well. Be careful that your dog that you don't leave food out to get pollens floating down into the foods, because they can irritate the GI tract as well.
And is it something, can they be taking that one step further? Can they just be wiped down with something?
Yes, that's fine. I would just wipe down with a cloth, a clean cloth, and water. You don't need to use baby wipes.
Right. Oh, gosh.
It's one more thing that's
clotting up the
biodegradable.
Area. Right.
Okay.
So clean cloth, water. I only mentioned that because a long time ago, I think it was you who taught me how effective water is. Just water, just cool water without, any, mm-hmm. anything.
The tops of the nose, around the eyes, the head and ears, and then down the back, and then rinse your rag and do the feet and legs. It really, you're lessening exposure to the offending substance, right? So any way that you can do that is helpful during this. Hopefully, it's just during one season.
Which seems to be in this particular case.
Mm-hmm.
All right, King Solomon, you have done a fantastic job. We really appreciate it. Thank you very much, King.
Thank you. I appreciate the questions.
King and Dr. Cannon, this has been Pet Files Ask the Vet, underwritten by the Millerton Veterinary Practice, 518-789-3440, millertonvet.com. Who let the dogs out?